one told me you would be so tall," he declared.
"My lord," she said, looking up.
"Well, I guess the only one who would have cared about that isn't around to see it." "Isshin!" he snapped, causing an almost unseen woman near the far side of the room to jump in compliance. "Take this one to her rooms and see that she has plenty of things to keep her occupied. Embroidery, or whatever else it is that entertains you women."
With that, the king turned to his next appointment, a group of merchants. Serene stood in mid-curtsy, stunned at Iodine's complete lack of courtesy. Only years of courtly training kept her jaw from dropping. Quick but unassertive, the woman Iodine had ordered, Queen Isshin, the king's wife, scuttled over and took Serene's arm. Isshin was short and slight of frame, her brownish-blonde aeonic hair only beginning to streak with gray.
"Come, child," Isshin said in a high-pitched voice. "We mustn't waste the king's time."
Serene allowed herself to be pulled through one of the room's side doors. "Merciful Domai," she muttered to herself. "What have I gotten myself into?"
"And you'll love it when the roses come in. I have the gardeners plant them so you can smell them without even leaning out the window. I wish they weren't so big, though."
Serene frowned in confusion. "The roses?"
"No, dear," the queen continued, barely pausing. "The windows. You can't believe how bright the sun is when it shines through them in the morning. I asked them, the gardeners, that is, to find me some orange ones, because I so adore orange. But so far all they found were some ghastly yellow ones. If I wanted yellow, I said to them, I would have had you plant abertines. You should have seen them apologize. I'm sure we'll have some orange ones by the end of next year. Don't you think that would be lovely, dear? Of course, the windows will still be too big. Maybe I can have a couple of them bricked off."
Serene nodded, fascinated, not by the conversation, but by the queen. Serene had assumed that the lecturers at her father's academy had been skilled at saying nothing with lots of words, but Isshin put them all to shame. The queen flitted from one topic to the next, like a butterfly looking for a place to land, but never finding one suitable enough for an extended stay. Any one of the topics would have been potential fuel for an interesting conversation, but the queen never let Serene grab hold of one long enough to do it justice. Serene took a calming breath, telling herself to be patient. She couldn't blame the queen for being the way she was. Domai taught that all people's personalities were gifts to be enjoyed. The queen was charming in her own meandering way. Unfortunately, after meeting both king and queen, Serene was beginning to suspect that she would have trouble finding political allies in Aerilan. Something else bothered Serene. Something odd about the way Isshin acted. No one could possibly talk as much as the queen did. She never let a silent moment pass. It was almost like the woman was uncomfortable around Serene. Then, in a moment of realization, Serene understood what it was. Isshin spoke on every imaginable topic except for the one most important: the departed prince. Serene narrowed her eyes with suspicion. She couldn't be certain. Isshin was, after all, a very flighty person. But it seemed that the queen was acting far too cheerful for a woman who had just lost her son.
"Here is your room, dear. We unpacked your things and added some as well. You have clothing in every color, even yellow, though I can't imagine why you would want to wear it. Horrid color. Not that your hair is horrid, of course. Blonde isn't the same as yellow, no. No more than a horse is a vegetable. We don't have a horse for you yet, but you are welcome to use any in the king's stables. We have lots of fine animals, you see. Dooladel is beautiful this time of year."
Of course, Serene said, looking over the room. It was small, but suited her tastes. Too much space could be as daunting as too little could be cramped.
Now, you'll be needing these, dear, Isshin said, pointing a small hand at a pile of clothing that wasn't hanging like the rest, as if it had been delivered more recently. All of the dresses in the pile shared a single attribute.
Black? Serene asked.
Of course, you're in... Isshin fumbled with the words.
I'm in mourning, Serene realized. She tapped her foot with dissatisfaction. Black was not one of her favorite colors. Isshin nodded.
You can wear one of those to the funeral this evening. It should be a nice service. I did the arrangements.
She began talking about her favorite flowers again, and the monologue soon degenerated into a discourse on how much she hated Fjordal cooking. Gently but firmly, Serene led the woman to the door, nodding pleasantly. As soon as they reached the hallway, Serene pled fatigue from her travels and plugged the queen's verbal torrent by closing the door.
That's going to get old very quickly, Serene said to herself.
The queen does have a robust gift for conversation, my lady, a deep voice agreed.
What did you find out? Serene asked, walking over to pick through the pile of dark clothing as Aishi floated in through the open window.
I didn't find as many Sions as I had expected. I seem to recall that the city was once overflowing with us.
I noticed that too, Serene said, holding up a dress in front of the mirror, then discarding it with a shake of her head. I guess things are different now.
They are indeed. As per your instructions, I asked the other Sions what they knew of the prince's untimely death. Unfortunately, my lady, they were hesitant to discuss the event. They consider it extremely ill-omened for the prince to die so soon before he was to be married.
Especially for him, Serene mumbled, pulling off her clothing to try on the dress. Aishi, something strange is going on. I think maybe someone killed the prince.
Killed, my lady? Aishi's deep voice was disapproving, and he pulsed slightly at the comment. Who would do such a thing?
I don't know, but something feels odd. This doesn't seem like a court that is in mourning. Take the queen, for instance. She didn't appear distraught when she spoke to me. You'd think she would be at least a little bothered by the fact that her son died yesterday.
There is a simple explanation for that, my lady. Queen Isshin is not Prince Raoden's mother. Raoden was born of Iodin's first wife, who died over 12 years ago.
When did he remarry?
Right after the Riod, Aishi said, just a few months after he took the throne.
Serene frowned. I'm still suspicious, she decided, reaching around awkwardly to button the back of her dress. Then she regarded herself in the mirror, looking at the dress critically. Well, at least it fits, even if it does make me look pale. I was afraid it would cut off at my knees. These Aerilish women are all so unnaturally short.
If you say so, my lady, Aishi replied.
He knew as well as she did that Aerilish women weren't that short. Even in Teod, Serene had been a head taller than most of the other women. Her father had called her Lecky Stick as a child, borrowing the name of the tall, thin post that marked the goal line in his favorite sport. Even after filling out during adolescence, Serene was still undeniably lanky.
My lady, Aishi said, interrupting her contemplations.
Yes, Aishi?
Your father is desperate to talk to you. I think you have some news he deserves to hear.
Serene nodded, holding in a sigh, and Aishi began to pulse brightly. A moment later, the ball of light that formed his essence melted into a bust-like glowing head. King Evantio of Teode.
"Een?"
her father asked, the glowing head's lips moving. He was a robust man, with a large oval face and a thick chin. "Yes, father, I'm here." Her father would be standing beside a similar Sion, probably Dio, who would have changed to resemble a glowing approximation of Serene's head.
"Are you nervous for the wedding?" Evantio asked anxiously.
"Well, about that wedding," she said slowly. "You'll probably want to cancel your plans to come next week. There won't be much for you to see."
"What?"
Aishi had been right. Her father didn't laugh when he heard that Raoden was dead. Instead, his voice turned to one of sharp concern, the glowing face worried. His worry increased when Serene explained how the death was as binding as an actual wedding.
"Oh, Een, I'm sorry," her father said. "I know how much you were expecting from this marriage."
"Nonsense, father." Evantio knew her far too well. "I hadn't even met the man. How could I have had any expectations?"
"You hadn't met him, but you had spoken with him through Sion. And you had written all those letters. I know you, Een. You're a romantic. You would never have decided to go through with this if you hadn't thoroughly convinced yourself that you could love Raoden."
The words rang true, and suddenly Serene's loneliness returned. She had spent the trip across the Sea of Fjorden in a state of disbelieving nervousness, both excited and apprehensive at the prospect of meeting the man who was to become her husband. More excited, however, than apprehensive. She had been away from Teode many times, but she had always gone with others from her homeland. This time she had come by herself, traveling ahead of the rest of the wedding party to surprise Raoden. She had read and reread the prince's letters so many times that she had begun to feel that she knew him, and the person she'd constructed from those sheets of paper was a complex, compassionate man whom she had been very anxious to meet. And now she never would. She felt more than alone. She felt rejected. Again. Unwanted. She had waited all these years, suffered by a patient father who didn't know how the men of her homeland avoided her, how they were frightened by her forward, even arrogant personality. Finally, she had found a man who was willing to have her, and Domai had snatched him away at the last moment. Serene finally began to let herself feel some of the emotions she had been keeping in a tight noose since stepping off the ship. She was glad the Sion transferred only her features, for she would have been mortified if her father had seen the tear rolling down her cheek.
"That's silly, father," she said. "This was a simple political marriage, and we all knew it. Now our countries have more in common than just language. Our royal lines are related."
"Oh, honey," her father whispered. "My little Serene. I had so hoped this would work out. You don't know how your mother and I prayed that you would find happiness there. Eidos Domai, we shouldn't have gone through with this."
"I would have made you, father," Serene said. "We need the treaty with Aerilon far too badly. Our armada won't keep Fjorden off our shores for much longer. The entire Svordish navy is under Wyrn's command."
"Little Serene, all grown up now," her father said through the Sion link.
"All grown up and fully capable of marrying herself off to a corpse," Serene laughed weakly. "It's probably for the best. I don't think Prince Raoden would have turned out as I had imagined. You should meet his father."
I've heard stories. I hoped they weren't true.
Oh, they are, Serene said, letting her dissatisfaction with the Aerilish monarch burn away her sorrow. King Iodine has to be just about the most disagreeable man I have ever met. He barely even acknowledged me before sending me off to, as he put it, go knit and whatever else you women do. If Raoden was anything like his father, then I'm better off this way. There was a momentary pause before her father responded.
Serene, do you want to come home? I can void the contract if I want, no matter what the laws say.
The offer was tempting. More tempting than she would ever admit. She paused.
No, father, she finally said, with an unconscious shake of her head. I have to stay. This was my idea, and Raoden's death doesn't change the fact that we need this alliance. Besides, returning home would break tradition. We both know that Aiden is my father now. It would be unseemly for you to take me back into your household.
I will always be your father, Ean. Domai curse the customs. Teod will always be open for you.
Thank you, father, Serene said quietly. I needed to hear that, but I still think I should stay, for now at least. Besides, it could be interesting. I have an entirely new court full of people to play with.
Ean, her father said apprehensively, I know that tone. What are you planning?
Nothing, she said. There's just a few things I want to poke my nose into before I give up completely on this marriage.
There was a pause, and then her father chuckled.
Domai protect them. They don't know what we've shipped over there. Go easy on them, Leckystick. I don't want to get a note from Minister Naolin in a month telling me that King Iodine has run off to join a Karathi monastery, and the Aerilish people have named you monarch instead.
All right, Serene said with a wan smile. I'll wait at least 2 months then. Her father burst into another round of his characteristic laughter, a sound that did her more good than any of his consolations or counsels.
Wait for a minute, Ean, he said after his laughter subsided. Let me get your mother. She'll want to speak with you.
Then, after a moment, he chuckled, continuing,
She's going to faint dead away when I tell her you've already killed off poor Raoden.
Father, Serene said. But he was already gone.
Chapter 3 None of Aerilon's people greeted their savior when he arrived. It was an affront, of course, but not an unexpected one. The people of Aerilon, especially those living near the infamous city of Elantris, were known for their godless, even heretical ways. Raethan had come to change that. He had 3 months to convert the entire kingdom of Aerilon. Otherwise, Holy Yadith, Lord of all creation, would destroy it. The time had finally come for Aerilon to accept the truths of the Durethi religion. Raethan strode down the gangplank. Beyond the docks, with their continuous bustle of loading and unloading, stretched the city of Kaei. A short distance beyond Kaei, Raethan could see a towering stone wall, the old city of Elantris. On the other side of Kaei, to Raethan's left, the land sloped steeply, rising to a tall hill, a foothill of what would become the Dathreki Mountains. Behind him was the ocean. Overall, Raethan was not impressed. In ages past, 4 small cities had surrounded Elantris, but only Kaei, the new capital of Aerilon, was still inhabited. Kaei was too unorganized too spread out to be defensible. And its only fortification appeared to be a small, 5-foot-high wall of stones, more a border than anything else. Retreat into Elantris would be difficult, and only marginally effective. K's buildings would provide wonderful cover for an invading force, and a few of K's more peripheral structures looked like they were built almost against Elantris's wall. This was not a nation accustomed to war. Yet of all the kingdoms on the Seeklin continent, the land named Opilon by the Aerilish people, only Aerilon itself had avoided domination by the Fjordal Empire. Of course, that too was something Raythan would soon change. Raythan marched away from the ship, his presence causing quite a stir among the people. Workers halted their labors as he passed, staring at him with impressed amazement. Conversations died when eyes fell upon him. Raythan didn't slow for anyone, but that didn't matter, for people moved quickly from his path. It could have been his eyes, but more likely it was his armor. Blood red and glittering in the sunlight, the plate armor of a Dorethi Imperial High Priest was an imposing sight, even when one was accustomed to it. He was beginning to think he would have to find his own way to the city's Dorethi Chapel, when he made out a spot of red weaving its way through the crowd. The speck soon resolved into a stumpy, balding figure clad in red Dorethi robes. "My Lord Raythan," the man called. Raythan stopped, allowing Fionn, K's Dorethi High Artith, to approach. Fionn puffed and wiped his brow with a silken handkerchief. "I'm terribly sorry, Your Grace. The Register had you scheduled to come in on a different ship. I didn't find out you weren't on board until they were halfway done unloading. I'm afraid I had to leave the carriage behind. I couldn't get it through the crowd." Raythan narrowed his eyes with displeasure, but he said nothing. Fionn continued to blather for a moment, before finally deciding to lead Raythan to the Dorethi Chapel, apologizing again for the lack of transportation. Raythan followed his pudgy guide with a measured stride, dissatisfied. Fionn trotted along with a smile on his lips, occasionally waving to passers on the streets, shouting pleasantries. The people responded in kind, at least until they saw Raythan, his blood cloak billowing behind him, and his exaggerated armor cut with sharp angles and harsh lines. Then they fell silent, greetings withering, their eyes following Raythan until he passed. Such was as it should be. The chapel was a tall stone structure, complete with bright red tapestries and towering spires. Here, at least, Raythan found some of the majesty he was accustomed to. Within, however, he was confronted by a disturbing sight. A crowd of people involved in some kind of social activity. People milled around, ignoring the holy structure in which they stood, laughing and joking. It was too much. Raythan had heard and believed the reports. Now he had confirmation. "Artith Fionn, assemble your priests," Raythan said, the first words he had spoken since his arrival on Aerilish soil. The Artith jumped, as if surprised to finally hear sounds coming from his distinguished guest. "Yes, my lord," he said, motioning for the gathering to end. It took a frustratingly long time, but Raythan endured the process with a flat expression. When the people had left, he approached the priests, his armored feet clicking against the chapel's stone floor. When he finally spoke, his words were directed at Fionn. "Artith," he said, using the man's Dorethi title, "the ship that brought me here will leave for Fjordan in 1 hour. You are to be on board." Fionn's jaw dropped in alarm.
"Wha-
Speak, Fjordel man, Raythan snapped. Surely 10 years among the Aerilish heathens hasn't corrupted you to the point that you have forgotten your native tongue.
No, no, your grace, Fionn replied, switching from Aeonic to Fjordel. But I...
Enough, Raythan interrupted again. I have orders from Wyrn himself. You have spent far too long in the Aerilish culture. You have forgotten your holy calling, and are unable to see to the progress of Yadath's empire. These people don't need a friend. They need a priest, a Dorethi priest. One would think you were Karathi, watching you fraternize. We're not here to love the people. We are here to help them. You will go.
Fionn slumped back against one of the room's pillars, his eyes widening and his limbs losing their strength.
But who will be head Artith of the chapel in my absence, my lord? The other Artiths are so inexperienced.
These are pivotal times, Artith, Raythan said. I'll be remaining in Aerilon to personally direct the work here. May Yadath grant me success.
He had hoped for an office with a better view, but the chapel, majestic as it was, held no second floor. Fortunately, the grounds were well kept, and his office, Fionn's old room, overlooked nicely trimmed hedges and carefully arranged flower beds. Now that he had cleared the walls of paintings, agrarian nature scenes for the most part, and thrown out Fionn's numerous personal effects, the chamber was approaching a level of dignified orderliness appropriate for a Dorethi Yorn. All it needed was a few tapestries and maybe a shield or two. Nodding to himself, Raythan turned his attention back to the scroll on his desk. His orders. He barely dared hold them in his profane hands. He read the words over and over again in his mind, imprinting both their physical form and their theological meaning on his soul.
My lord, your grace? A quiet voice asked in Fjordel.
Raythan looked up. Fionn entered the room, then crouched in a subservient huddle on the floor, his forehead rubbing the ground. Raythan allowed himself to smile, knowing that the penitent Artith couldn't see his face. Perhaps there was hope for Fionn yet.
Speak, Raythan said.
I have done wrong, my lord. I have acted contrary to the plans of our lord Yadath.
Your sin was complacency, Artith. Contentment has destroyed more nations than any army, and it has claimed the souls of more men than even Elantris's heresies.
Yes, my lord.
You still must leave, Artith, Raythan said.
The man's shoulders slumped slightly.
Is there no hope for me, then, my lord?
That is Aerilish foolishness speaking, Artith, not Fjordel pride.
Raythan reached down, grasping the man's shoulder.
Rise, my brother, he commanded.
Fionn looked up, hope returning to his eyes.
Your mind may have become tainted with Aerilish thoughts, but your soul is still Fjordel. You are of Yadath's chosen people. All of the Fjordel have a place of service in his empire. Return to our homeland. Join a monastery to reacquaint yourself with those things you have forgotten, and you will be given another way to serve the empire.
Yes, my lord.
Raythan's grip grew hard.
Understand this before you leave, Artith. My arrival is more of a blessing than you can possibly understand. All of Yadath's workings are not open to you. Do not think to second-guess our God.
He paused, debating his next move. After a moment he decided, this man still had worth. Raythan had a unique chance to reverse much of Aerilon's perversion of Fionn's soul in a single stroke. "Look there, on the table, Ardeth. Read that scroll."
Fionn looked toward the desk, eyes finding the scroll resting thereon. Raythan released the man's shoulder, allowing him to walk around the desk and read.
"This is the official seal of Wyrn himself," Fionn said, picking up the scroll.
"Not just the seal, Ardeth," Raythan said. "That is his signature as well. The document you hold was penned by His Holiness himself. That isn't just a letter. It is scripture."
Fionn's eyes opened wide, and his fingers began to quiver.
"Wyrn himself?"
Then, realizing in full what he was holding in his unworthy hand, he dropped the parchment to the desk with a quiet yelp. His eyes didn't turn away from the letter, however. They were transfixed, reading the words as voraciously as a starving man devoured a joint of beef. Few people actually had an opportunity to read words written by the hand of Yareth's prophet and holy emperor. Raythan gave the priest time to read the scroll, then reread it, and then read it again. When Fionn finally looked up, there was understanding and gratitude in his face. The man was intelligent enough. He knew what the orders would have required of him had he remained in charge of Kehi.
"Thank you," Fionn mumbled.
Raythan nodded graciously. "Could you have done it? Could you have followed Wyrn's commands?"
Fionn shook his head, eyes darting back to the parchment.
"No, Your Grace. I could not have. I couldn't have functioned, couldn't have even thought with that on my conscience. I do not envy your place, my lord. Not anymore."
"Return to Fjordan with my blessing, brother," Raythan said,
taking a small envelope from a bag on the table.
"Give this to the priests there. It is a letter from me, telling them you accepted your reassignment, with the grace befitting a servant of Yareth. They will see that you are assigned to a monastery. Perhaps someday you will be allowed to lead a chapel again, one well within Fjordan's borders."
"Yes, my lord. Thank you, my lord."
Fionn withdrew, closing the door behind him. Raythan walked to his desk and slid another envelope, identical to the one he had given Fionn, from his letter bag. He held it for a few moments, then turned it to one of the desk's candles. The words it held, condemning Ardeth Fionn as a traitor and an apostate, would never be read, and the poor, pleasant Ardeth would never know just how much danger he had been in.
"With your leave, my Lord Yorn," said the bowing priest, a minor dwarven who had served under Fionn for over a decade.
Raythan waved his hand, bidding the man to leave. The door shut silently as the priest backed from the room. Fionn had done some serious damage to his underlings. Even a small weakness would build enormous flaws over 2 decades' time. And Fionn's problems were anything but small. The man had been lenient to the point of flagrancy. He had run a chapel without order, bowing before Aerilish culture rather than bringing the people strength and discipline. Half of the priests serving in Kehi were hopelessly corrupted, including men as new to the city as 6 months. Within the next few weeks, Raythan would be sending a veritable fleet of priests back to Fjordan. He'd have to pick a new head Ardeth from those who remained, few though they would be. A knock came at the door.
"Come," Raythan said.
He had been seeing the priests one at a time, feeling out the extent of their contamination.
So far, he had not often been impressed.
Artith Delaf, the priest said, introducing himself as he entered.
Raythan looked up. The name and words were Fjordal, but the accent was slightly off. It sounded almost...
You're Aerilish? Raythan said with surprise.
The priest bowed with the proper amount of subservience. His eyes, however, were defiant.
How did you become a priest of Dorethi? Raythan asked. I wanted to serve the Empire, the man replied, his voice quietly intense. Yadith provided a way. No, Raythan realized, it isn't defiance in this man's eyes. It's religious fervor.
One did not often find zealots in the Dorethi religion. Such people were more often drawn to the frenzied lawlessness of the Jaskari mysteries than to the militaristic organization of Shudarith. This man's face, however, burned with fanatical passion. It was not a bad thing, while Raythan himself spurned such lack of control. He had often found zealots to be useful tools.
Yadith always provides a way, Artith, Raythan said carefully. Be more specific. I met a Dorethi Artith in Dúladel 12 years ago. He preached to me, and I believed. He gave me copies of the Dokesig and Dodereth, and I read them both in one night. The Holy Artith sent me back to Erelan to help convert those in my home country, and I set up in Rhaein. I taught there for 7 years, until the day I heard that a Dorethi chapel had been built in Kei itself. I overcame my loathing for the Elantrians, knowing that Holy Artith had struck them down with an eternal punishment, and came to join with my Fjordal brethren. I brought my converts with me. Fully half of the believers in Kei came with me from Rhaein. Fionn was impressed with my diligence. He granted me the title of Artith, and allowed me to continue teaching. Raythan rubbed his chin thoughtfully, regarding the Aerilish priest.
You know what Artith Fionn did was wrong.
Yes, my lord. An Artith cannot appoint another to his own position. When I speak to the people, I never refer to myself as a priest of Dorethi. Only a teacher.
A very good teacher, Delaf's tone implied.
What did you think of Artith Fionn? Raythan asked.
He was an undisciplined fool, my lord. His laxness kept Yadith's kingdom from growing in Erelan, and has made a mockery of our religion.
Raythan smiled. Delaf, though not one of the chosen race, was obviously a man who understood the doctrine and culture of his religion. However, his ardor could be dangerous. The wild intensity in Delaf's eyes was barely under control. Either he would have to be watched very closely, or he would have to be disposed of.
It appears that Artith Fionn did one thing right, even if he didn't have the proper authority, Raythan said.
Delaf's eyes burned even more brightly at the declaration.
I make you a full Artith, Delaf.
Delaf bowed, touching his head to the ground. His mannerisms were perfectly Fjordal, and Raythan had never heard a foreigner speak the holy tongue so well. This man could prove useful indeed. After all, one common complaint against Shudarith was that it favored the Fjordal. An Aerilish priest could help prove that all were welcome within Yadath's empire, even if the Fjordal were the most welcome. Raythan congratulated himself on creating such a useful tool, completely satisfied until the moment Delaf looked up from his bow. The passion was still there in Delaf's eyes, but there was something else as well. Ambition. Raythan frowned slightly, wondering whether or not he had just been manipulated. There was only one thing to do.
Artith, are you sworn as any man's odiv?
Surprise. Delaf's eyes opened wide as he stared up at Raythan, uncertainty flashing therein.
No, my lord.
Good.
Then I will make you mine.
My lord,
I am, of course, your humble servant.
You will be more than that, Artith, Raythan said.
If you would be my odiv, I your Rodan. You will be mine, heart and soul. If you follow Yarath, you follow him through me. If you serve the Empire, you do it under me. Whatever you think, act, or say will be by my direction. Am I understood?
Fire burned in Delaf's eyes.
Yes, he hissed.
The man's fervor wouldn't let him reject such an offer. Though his lowly rank of Artith would remain unchanged, being odiv to a Yawn would enormously increase Delaf's power and respectability. He would be Raythan's slave, if that slavery would carry him higher. It was a very Fjordal thing to do. Ambition was the one emotion Yarath would accept as readily as devotion.
Good, Raythan said. Then your first order is to follow the priest, Fionn. He should be getting on the ship to Fjordal right at this moment. I want you to make sure he does so. If Fionn gets off for any reason, kill him.
Yes, my Yawn.
Delaf rushed from the room. He finally had an outlet for his enthusiasm. All Raythan had to do now was keep that enthusiasm focused in the right direction. Raythan stood for a moment after the Aerilish man had gone, then shook his head and turned back to his desk. The scroll still lay where it had fallen from Fionn's unworthy fingers. Raythan picked it up with a smile, his touch reverent. He was not a man who delighted in possessions. He set his sights on much grander accomplishments than the simple accumulation of useless baubles. However, occasionally, an object came along that was so unique, Raythan reveled in simply knowing it belonged to him. One did not own such a thing for its usefulness, or for its ability to impress others, but because it was a privilege to possess. The scroll was such an object. It had been scribed in front of Raythan by Wyrn's own hand. It was revelation directly from Yarath. Scripture intended for only one man. Few people ever got to meet Yarath's anointed. And even among the Yawns, private audiences were rare. To receive orders directly from Wyrn's hand, such was the most exquisite of experiences. Raythan ran his eyes over the sacred words again, even though he had long since memorized their every detail.
Behold the words of Yarath, through his servant Wyrn Wulfdan the IV, Emperor and King. High priest and son, your request has been granted. Go to the heathen peoples of the West and declare to them my final warning. For while my empire is eternal, my patience will soon end. Not much longer will I slumber within a tomb of rock. The day of empire is at hand, and my glory will soon shine forth, a second sun blazing forth from Fjordan. The pagan nations of Aerilan and Teod have been blackened scars upon my land for long enough. 300 years have my priests served amongst those tainted by Elantris, and few have hearkened to their call. Know this, High Priest. My faithful warriors are prepared, and they wait only the word of my Wyrn. You have 3 months to prophesy to the people of Aerilon. At the end of that time, the holy soldiers of Fjordan will descend on the nation like hunting predators, rending and tearing the unworthy life from those who heed not my words. Only 3 months will pass before the destruction of all who oppose my empire. The time for my ascension nears, my son. Be stalwart, and be diligent. Words of Yadith, Lord of all creation. Through his servant Wyrn Wulfdan IV, Emperor of Fjordan, Prophet of Shudarith, ruler of Yadith's holy kingdom, and regent of all creation. The time had finally come. Only 2 nations resisted. Fjordan had regained its former glory, glory lost hundreds of years ago when the First Empire collapsed. Once again, Aerilon and Teod were the only 2 kingdoms who resisted Fjordel rule. This time, with the might of Yadith's holy calling behind it, Fjordan would prevail. Then, with all mankind united under Wyrn's rule, Yadith could rise from his throne beneath the earth and reign in glorious majesty. And Raethan would be the one responsible for it. The conversion of Aerilon and Teod was his urgent duty. He had 3 months to change the religious temperament of an entire culture. It was a monumental task, but it was vital that he succeed. If he did not, Fjordan's armies would destroy every living being in Aerilon, and Teod would soon follow. The 2 nations, though separated by water, were the same in race, religion, and obstinance. The people might not yet know it, but Raethan was the only thing standing between them and utter annihilation. They had resisted Yadith and his people in arrogant defiance for far too long. Raethan was their last chance. Someday, they would call him their savior. Chapter 4. The woman screamed until she grew too tired, calling for help, for mercy, for Domai. She clawed at the broad gate, her fingernails leaving marks in the film of slime. Eventually, she slumped to the ground in a quiet heap, shaking from occasional sobs. Seeing her agony, reminded Raoden of his own pain, the sharp twinge of his toe, the loss of his life outside. "They won't wait much longer," Galadin whispered, his hand firmly on Raoden's arm, holding the prince back. The woman finally stumbled to her feet, looking dazed, as if she had forgotten where she was. She took a single, uncertain step to her left, her palm resting on the wall, as if it were a comfort, a connection to the outside world, rather than the barrier separating her from it. "It's done," Galadin said. "Just like that?" Raoden asked. Galadin nodded. "She picked well, or as well as one could. Watch." Shadows stirred in an alleyway directly across the courtyard. Raoden and Galadin watched from inside a ramshackle stone building, one of the many that lined Elantris's entry courtyard. The shadows resolved into a group of men, and they approached the woman with determined, controlled steps, surrounding her. One reached out and took her basket of offerings. The woman didn't have the strength left to resist. She simply collapsed again. Raoden felt Galadin's fingers dig into his shoulder as he involuntarily pulled forward, wanting to dash out to confront the thieves. "Not a good idea,"
Kolo, Galadin whispered. Save your courage for yourself. If stubbing your toe nearly knocked you out, think how it would feel to have one of those cudgels cracking across your brave little head.
Rayodin nodded, relaxing. The woman had been robbed, but it didn't look like she was in further danger. It hurt, however, to watch her. She wasn't a young maiden. She bore the stout figure of a woman accustomed to childbirth and the running of a household. A mother, not a damsel. The strong lines of the woman's face bespoke hard-won wisdom and courage, and somehow that made watching her more difficult. If such a woman could be defeated by Elantris, what hope was there for Rayodin?
I told you she chose well, Galadin continued. She might be a few pounds of food lighter, but she doesn't have any wounds. Now, if she had turned right, like you did, Sule, she would have been at the dubious mercy of Sheor's men. If she had gone forward, then Eäinden would have had the right to her offerings. The left turn is definitely best. Caerites' men take your food, but they rarely hurt you. Better to be hungry than spend the next few years with a broken arm.
Next few years? Rayodin asked, turning away from the courtyard to regard his tall, dark-skinned companion. I thought you said our wounds would last us an eternity.
We only assume they will, Sule. Show me an Elantrian who has managed to keep his wits until eternity ends, and maybe he'll be able to prove the theory. How long do people usually last in here?
A year, maybe two, Galadin said.
What?
Thought we were immortal, did you? Just because we don't age, we'll last forever?
I don't know, Rayodin said. I thought you said we couldn't die.
We can't, Galadin said. But the cuts, the bruises, the stubbed toes, they pile up. One can only take so much.
They kill themselves? Rayodin asked quietly.
That's not an option. No, most of them lie around mumbling or screaming. Poor Rulos.
How long have you been here, then?
A few months.
The realization was another shock to pile on the already teetering stack. Rayodin had assumed that Galadin had been an Elantrian for at least a few years. The doula spoke of life in Elantris as if it had been his home for decades, and he was impressively adept at navigating the enormous city. Rayodin looked back at the courtyard, but the woman had already gone. She could have been a maid in his father's palace, a wealthy merchant's lady, or a simple housewife. The Sheod respected no classes. It took from all, equally. She was gone now, having entered the gaping pit that was Elantris. He should have been able to help her.
All that for a single loaf of bread and a few flaccid vegetables, Rayodin muttered. It may not seem like much now, but just wait a few days. The only food that enters this place comes clutched in the arms of its new arrivals. You wait, Sule. You will feel the desire as well. It takes a strong man to resist when the hunger calls.
You do it, Rayodin said.
Not very well. And I've only been here a few months. There's no telling what the hunger will drive me to do a year from now.
Rayodin snorted. Just wait until my 30 days are done before you become a primordial beast, if you please. I'd hate to feel that I hadn't gotten my beef's worth out of you.
Galadin paused for a moment, then laughed.
Does nothing frighten you, Sule?
Actually, pretty much everything here does. I'm just good at ignoring the fact that I'm terrified. If I ever realize how scared I am, you'll probably find me trying to hide under those cobblestones over there. Now, tell me more about these gangs.
Galadin shrugged,
walking away from the broken door and pulling a chair away from the wall. He turned a critical eye on its legs, then carefully settled down. He moved just quickly enough to stand again as the legs cracked. He tossed the chair away with disgust and settled on the floor. "There are three sections of Elantra, Sule, and three gangs. The market section is ruled by Sheor. You met a few members of his court yesterday, though they were too busy licking the slime off your offerings to introduce themselves. In the palace section, you'll find Kerita. She's the one who so very politely relieved that woman of her food today. Last is Aenden. He spends most of his time in the university section. A learned man? No, an opportunist. He was the first one who realized that many of the library's older texts were written on vellum. Yesterday's classics have become tomorrow's lunch. Kolo? Eidos Domai, Raoden swore. That's atrocious. The old scrolls of Elantris are supposed to hold countless original works. They're priceless. Galadin turned him a suffering eye. Sule, do I need to repeat my speech about hunger? What good is literature when your stomach hurts so much your eyes water? That's a terrible argument. 2-century-old lambskin scrolls can't possibly taste very good. Galadin shrugged. Better than slime. Anyway, Aenden supposedly ran out of scrolls a few months back. They tried boiling books, but that didn't work very well. I'm surprised they haven't tried boiling one another. Oh, it's been tried, Galadin said. Fortunately, something happens to us during the Sheod. Apparently the flesh of a dead man doesn't taste too good. Kolo? In fact, it's so violently bitter that no one can keep it down. It's nice to see that cannibalism has been so logically ruled out as an option, Raoden said dryly. I told you, Sule. The hunger makes men do strange things. And that makes it all right? Wisely, Galadin didn't answer. Raoden continued. You talk about hunger and pain as if they're forces which can't be resisted. Anything is acceptable as long as the hunger made you do it. Remove our comforts and we become animals. Galadin shook his head. I'm sorry, Sule, but that's just the way things work. It doesn't have to be. 10 years wasn't long enough. Even in Aerilon's thick humidity, it should have taken longer for the city to deteriorate so much. Elantris looked as if it had been abandoned for centuries. Its wood was decaying. Its plaster and bricks were disintegrating. Even stone buildings were beginning to crumble. And coating everything was the omnipresent film of brown sludge. Raoden was finally getting used to walking on the slippery, uneven cobblestones. He tried to keep himself clean of the slime, but the task proved impossible. Every wall he brushed and every ledge he grasped left its mark on him. The two men walked slowly down a broad street. The thoroughfare was far larger than any of its kind back in Kei. Elantris had been built on a massive scale, and while the size had seemed daunting from without, Raoden was only now beginning to grasp just how enormous the city was. He and Galadin had been walking for hours, and Galadin said they were still a moderate distance from their destination. The two did not rush, however. That was one of the first things Galadin had taught. In Elantris, one took one's time. Everything the doula did was performed with an air of utter precision. His movements relaxed and careful. The slightest scratch, no matter how negligible, added to an Elantrian's pain. the more careful one was, the longer one would stay sane. So, Raoden followed.